The following is a production of Art Trap Productions, brought to you by the Gallifreyan Embassy and has been made possible by supporting subscribers and donations from listeners like you. This episode is brought to you by Audible. Please visit www.audiblepodcast.com/podchalk for your free audiobook download. Hey, this is Louis Trapani here, and a comment about this episode. We are reviewing The End of Time Part 1 in this episode of Doctor Who Podchalk. This was a live recording we did on the 27th of December, 2009. And because everyone had a lot to say about The End of Time Part 1, this episode ran a little bit long, so therefore we're breaking this up into two parts. So this is Part 1 of 2 of our discussion on The End of Time Part 1. I know that sounds all confusing, but it would all make sense to you once you listen to it. We'll try to get Part 2 of the review of Part 1 to you before Part 2 of The End of Time airs on the BBC.
Live from Broadwell Prison, it's Doctor Who Podshock.
Doctor Who Podshock.
Okay, well, let's do it.
No, I...
You know, whatever it is, if it's valuable, send it to us.
For the best in all things Doctor Who, it's Doctor Who Podshock, the podcast all about Doctor Who, the longest-running science fiction television program, with Louis Trapani.
Hello.
Ken Deep.
Hello.
James Norton.
Hello.
News.
Fabulous.
Reviews.
Oh, no.
And fan mail for James.
40,000.
Doctor Who Podshock, from the Gallifreyan Embassy.
You know, that guy James was really cool. Oh, yeah, we blew that.
I'm the Doctor, and who are you?
Ah, now, sorry. There you are. So, where were we? I was summoned, wasn't I? Ooh, in the snow.
You will come with me.
Hold on. Better lock the TARDIS. See? Like a car.
You will join. You will join. He comes to us. Every night. I think all the peoples of the universe dream of him now.
That man is dead.
There is yet more. There is a man. So scared.
Wilfred, is he all right?
The woman in the cage. Who is she?
She was... It wasn't her fault. She was... The Master, he's a Time Lord, like me.
Part of him survived.
I have to go!
But something more is happening, Doctor. The Master is part of a greater design. Because a shadow is falling over creation.
The end of time itself.
These are the potions of life.
Listen to me. Whatever he told you, you've got no idea what you're doing.
Mr. Fusus, the catalyst, biometrical signature.
You can't bring him back. You can't. Stop this now before it's too late.
Give ourselves that Saxon might.
Never dying! Never dying!
Oh, Lucy! Sweet Lucy Saxon! My ever faithful! Did the widow's kiss bring me back to life?
You're killing them!
Oh, let them die. They're just at the first. The whole stupid, stinking human disgrace can fall into the pit.
I knew you'd come back! And all this time, your disciples have prepared! But so have we!
What are you doing?
The secret books of Saxon!
Don't you dare! I'm ordering you, Lucy! You will obey me!
Till death, do us a part, Harry!
Someone survived. Do you think it's him? Be such a Christmas present.
You just leave it to Daddy.
Prepare the gate.
The Gallifreyan Embassy presents Doctor Who Podshock number 175. We are here discussing The End of Time Part 1, and this is Lewis Trapani, and joining me is none other than James Norton across the pond. Hello, James.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going well. I hope you had a good holiday.
Yeah, I hope you did too as well, mate.
Well, yeah, thank you. I did. And alongside, are you rubbing elbows against you, is Mr. Dave A.C. Cooper.
Yes, hey, but I didn't quite have as much snow as you, I believe, Lewis. But,
well, we weren't competing, but you did get some snow. You had, a white Christmas, and so did I, a little bit more white than I had anticipated.
Hoped.
You know, knee-deep in whiteness isn't exactly how you want to spend the holiday, but or shoveling, I should say. Well, what are you going to do? It's not that common that we have a white Christmas here in at least where I am. It's occasionally it happens. So it was nice. It was just said, you know, the shoveling wasn't nice, but tunneling out of a tunneling your car out of a snow dune isn't that nice, but. But we got a new Doctor Who episode as a holiday gift, so I guess we can't complain. I mean, it's rare this year to get new Doctor Who episodes, so it's a good thing, I guess.
Yeah.
Ken Deep isn't here right now as we record this. Hopefully he'll be joining us as we progress, and he'll join us in progress. So, as always, when we have these episodes that we're reviewing, which are two-parters, it's always difficult to rate or give a review on the one part only. You know, we're always up against the wall, really, when we are, you know, in this situation where we sort of like, well, you know what, our final rating will depend on when we see part two of it. And I think this particular story, more so than ever before, is the case where it's even clearly written in the title, part one and part two, where that's something new for Doctor Who. Well, it's not new for Doctor Who, but new for Doctor Who since it's come back in 2005.
Yes.
So, and I think originally it was rumored, I think Ken had announced it in the previous episode, it was something of nightmares or something like that, which sort of kind of makes sense now, seeing, you know, this episode where nightmares play into it, or Reign of Nightmares, thank you, Tim and Therese. Or Nightmare's Reign was one of the two. I think it was Nightmare's Reign, but...
Close enough.
And the prize goes to... So we are recording this live on TalkShoe, and if you're listening on TalkShoe right now, you can enter the queue by... if you're using the TalkShoe software or whatever, you can just enter the queue and that way. But otherwise, you can call in 724-444-7444. That's a lot of fours. The call ID number for our show is 23358. So get yourself in the queue now so that we can hopefully get you all in on this show. So as I was saying, it's difficult to kind of give our review of this episode. Maybe instead of giving reviews and ratings, maybe we should maybe just focus on just discussing what we saw and what we liked and what we didn't like and go from that direction. I mean, I myself coming after... on the heels of the Waters of Mars. And again, I don't want to prejudge this because we haven't seen the whole story, but it was a little disappointing in comparison to that, even though I think, you know, you can nitpick anything. So we all know this is the final two specials that will see David Tennant, the 10th Doctor, you know, regenerate into the 11th. At least we hope that we get to see that at the end. And wouldn't that be funny if they didn't know?
Well, big hoax.
So, there's been a lot of anticipation and leading up to this. So from the reactions I've seen from other people on the net so far, it's either sort of a love or hate this episode. And I don't think I fall into either camp yet, you know, I'm going to hold off final judgment until next week until I see part two. But it seems like the reactions have been pretty extreme. Either, you know, people are rating it at, you know, between 1 and 5, giving it an 11 or a negative 5 or something like that. So some comments that I'll just pass off in this discussion is that rattle off some things here, just some points, some observations in this episode. Obviously, the Master is back, and he's a little bit more insane than usual. And it opens up some questions because we're not really sure how he's... Well, they do show how he's back, but I'm still kind of confused on, you know, on these powers that he now has. And that's not really fully explained, at least in this episode, where all of a sudden, you know, well, a lot of, again, Doctor Who's going into the magic bag instead of science again, bringing him back. And that's really... It was more like a act of witchcraft than science in bringing him back. All right, so we'll give him some artistic license and let that go. Lucy had the remains of his biological imprint on her lips still after all this time. I guess she's never licked her lips. So, whatever. You know, and again, I guess she's dead now after we see the prison destroyed, because it's never really explained what happened to her and her legion of people and the other Master's followers.
Well, it does say in that clip, doesn't it, that they see one person, one figure escaping. So we assume, I think, that everybody else in that room dies.
Oh, we do see one figure escaping?
In yeah, that clip, you were saying the father was saying...
Okay, all right. And what else do we see? Again, all this maybe might be explained in next episode. Obviously, the other big mystery is this woman in white that's constantly throughout this episode speaking with Wilf, and we don't know who she is. You know, there's some speculation.
Oh, White Guardian. Oh, White Guardian.
Well, she's dressed in white, but...
We have the 13th century mentioned, but that's not explained.
Yeah,
where Will sees the TARDIS, and that's what she's talking to him about.
Yeah, I'm all right. So she, let's go back to the Master, because I'm still kind of confused about this. So the Master's back, and he's back because some sort of potion of life that he left behind, and Lucy had people that could work on it, but wasn't perfect with it, she had devised some sort of counter potion of life. And threw it at him, and then that's all we see from that scene. In fact, the first time I saw this episode, you know, this part, I thought maybe I missed something, and I was anxiously, when I was rewatching it again before reviewing this show, I'm like, okay, now I'm going to see that scene that I missed. I thought maybe I fell asleep or something like that. I didn't. It's just not explained.
It was the scene they'd taken out of Curse of the Fatal Death. That was what that scene was.
So I mean, why is he growling? Why is he so hungry? Why is he exposing his innards? You know, where his outer skin turns invisible or whatever. Obviously, this is all done for artistic license and effect, but story wise, it just doesn't really make too much sense. And you know, and I have to say, you know, even though I love John Sim and I think he's spectacular, it seemed like this role was more suited for maybe Simon Pegg than John Simmons, but it just seems a bit over the top even for, I mean, than what we've seen before, but I think that's exactly what they were going after. But it makes me long for the cold, understated, you know, the cold, calculating, understated Master that we knew from the past, you know, the Roger Delgado Master, if you will. But then again, you can argue, well, the Doctor's not the same as John Pertwee either anymore. So, you know, he's changed with his regenerations. So I thought the cafe scene was a nice touch there. I thought too bad that we didn't get more of that type of dialogue and storytelling there. But I guess there was a lot to squeeze in there in this part. Part two is going to be 75 minutes long, so there's going to be a lot to squeeze in there as well. In fact, if you've seen the Confidential of this episode, there was actually a scene that they had to nip out, which was with the reporter. That's the forget her name. It's the reporter that we've seen since the Christopher Eccleston series. Trinity Wells.
Trinity Wells. Yes. Yeah.
that would be kind of cool if maybe if the 11th Doctor has an adventure with her, you know, even, you know, as like a one-off companion or something like that, or be kind of cool.
Mm.
James, what did you think?
I pretty much agree with everything you said. I know that it is sort of a very much a love-hate episode from a fan perspective. But I think that I'm quite undecided. There were lots of bits that I liked, but there were lots of bits that I didn't like. But I think that they've had to obviously establish quite a bit here to build up to part two, basically, where they'll bring everything to a close. And I really, really didn't like how they brought the Master back. And it seemed like once they'd brought him back, which I was prepared to suspend my disbelief for a little bit, just so that we could, you know, have the Master return. And it was great to see that Lucy was back and all the rest of it. But I just didn't really get the Master's powers at all. And yeah, you hit the nail on the head, Lewis, when you said it was all just for effect. But there was no need for it. There was absolutely no need for it. It didn't add anything to the story. And the first half of the story just felt like all the Doctor was doing was running around after trying to find the Master and trying to confront him. And all he's doing is jumping around and shooting lightning from his hands. It just doesn't make any sense. There's no point to it. And I think if they'd have cut that out, which wasn't necessary, and we know that they can do nice special effects on Doctor Who now, there's no need for it. If they'd have cut that out, they'd have left a whole load more room to explain various different things, how the Master came back, and explain all of this stuff, how, you know, now he's a lot different as a result of his sort of his resurrection being dismayed by Lucy, you know, her trying to stop him from coming back and so on and so forth. It all just felt like a lot of that was just in a series of throwaway lines, you know, that his resurrection particularly, but also in how the Doctor explains, you know, his powers. It's just a quick bit of techno babble and that's it. It doesn't say anything or explain anything.
Yeah, the Doctor really himself isn't even like fazed by it. You know, he doesn't.
He just
says, "Oh, you're going to burn yourself out. You're burning." He has some throwaway line like that where
burning out his life force or something. But I mean, I quite like that the Master now is a lot more crazy and a lot more sort of, you know, he's less cool and less calculating. He is feral. He's very much like a wild animal now. And I quite like that. But, you know, they could have written that in a little bit better. You know, a lot of people have been saying, oh, it's typical of Russell T. Davies, you know. And I think he's really building it up. But he's had to build that climax up a lot, I think, and, you know, invest some interest there. But, I mean, I think that you could basically summarize this episode in a few sentences, really. There wasn't the need to go into so many things in as much depth as they did. And having said that, you know, having said that the way they brought the Master back and, you know, this whole sort of rather silly premise of the Master becoming, you know, changing all of the humans into this Master race, you know, it just seemed like they'd come up with that pun and thought, how can we bring that into Doctor Who? How can we make, you know... It just felt, you know, and whilst I thought some of the special effects were rather clever and, you know, and quite innovative, you know, by just getting somebody to stand in front of the camera and shake their heads. And I loved on The Confidential that they even showed you how they did that. Mm-hmm. And on the monitor, all they did is where they have the actor who shake their head, they drew around them just in marker pen on the screen and then got John Sim to stand in afterwards. I thought that was really funny and, you know, quite creative and all the rest of it. But, you know, was there much of a need that the battle should be between the Master and the Doctor? And I think that's what we're going to see in part two. Although, I even tweeted about this, I had several, for want of a better word, nerdgasms at several points throughout the episode. firstly bringing the Time Lords back and showing that at the end of the episode was a stroke of genius. I think it's fantastic that Timothy Dalton is now the Lord President and, you know, gives this really fantastic speech to the Time Lords. But one thing that I did find rather distracting about that is that Timothy Dalton did seem to spit quite a lot when he was speaking, which I thought detracted from it quite a bit, you know.
I guess no one had the nerve to go up to Timothy Dalton and say, you know, say it, don't spray it.
Exactly. or they didn't have the nerve to edit that out in post. But anyway, you know, I really liked this episode on the whole. I thought it was good, and it's nice that they brought the Master back. But I think... The next episode is what's going to be crucial and what's going to really, going to be key. And I hope it's going to be a lot better than this one, because I think they've really set something up fantastic in a fantastic way here. And it's going to be really interesting to see how it's going to play out. And that this is when Russell T. Davies does do his cliffhangers, he does do them very, very well. And I think it's going to be an interesting episode on New Year's Day.
Yeah, I like yourself, I was very pleased, you know, with that last bit with the Time Lords. And, you know, we've been predicting their return for many years now. And it was it would have been disappointing if this episode didn't have any of that in it. And if it was just Timothy Dalton's narrating.
Yeah, it would have been, because we knew that Timothy Dalton was playing some role in it, and we knew that he was in, you know, Time Lord robes, just from all the spoiler photos that have been out there, you know, from various mobile phones and so on. So it was great that they put it in there. And I think if they hadn't have put it in there, then I wouldn't have been excited at all about part two, whereas now I really am, because now we're going to see now that it's not just that this whole end of time business isn't really to do much with the Master. It's more to do with the Time Lords. And I think we're going to see the Time Lords as being, you know, more evil and malevolent than we've seen them in the past, or which is how they should be. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, what is more evil or malevolent, to have a whole society that just watches what goes on and doesn't interfere and doesn't stop, you know, bad things from happening. And, you know, the Doctor being completely opposed to that and against it. And that's going to be really interesting to see how it all pans out. But with that said, I'll let Dave chime in. I think I'll know what he's going to say, because he's not a big fan of the Christmas specials.
No, I don't know why they bother. First of all, I watched this with my son, and he was perhaps more critical than me. His first comment was when it started with a voiceover. I mean, I like voiceovers in all films, like film noir films, but in this sort of programme, when they start with a voiceover, you sometimes think there's going to be a lot of explanation and they can't think of how to do it. The big relief for me was, oh, good heavens, when the Doctor, he locks his TARDIS like a car. I thought, well, thank God that Russell T. Davies is leaving in one sense, because I think next time he'll be opening the TARDIS by breaking wind, because they seem to be doing everything they can.
So, kicking his fingers, you mean, and now
I think, I suppose that's the kids. But I liked the first 10 minutes, and then we got to that curse of the fatal death. You know, we've got a potion now. Well, I've got a counter potion. And although she'd been locked in a cage for how long, and as you say, she must have been very chaste, because she still had the Master's DNA on her lips. So
the Master's imprint, or biological imprint.
Imprint or something, yeah.
Right. Well, whatever I don't know that much effect on women's lips, but never mind. I don't mind now that we know that the Master has been portrayed with the drums, and he thinks it's been madness. And I love the scene where, well, not love, but one of the saving scenes was between him and the Master, where the Doctor affirms that the drum sound is real. And of course,
yes, that was really good.
Yeah, I assume it's his equivalent of the Doctor being told it will knock four times, because he's getting a four-beat drumming. So, presumably, in their own ways, they're both getting the same, you know, impending doom message. Again, absolutely what you said, James. I think, as with the Voyage of the Damned, it was a TARDIS into the Buckingham Palace. It was the Master Race. How, you know, we're bringing the Master Race, and of course he wanted to get the Master in a dress. So that's two things in one.
I'm just cackling. Manic.
Yeah, quite rightly. I was surprised. I mean, the Doctor didn't seem fazed at all to suddenly see, you know, his arch enemy has got superpowers. You would have thought that would have been something that he would have at least reacted to. The only thing I can think of about them doing that, apart from the fact, of course, and I think it's Taras and someone else who put in the text about it, Lucy Saxon had not stopped him but had affected his regeneration. The only reason I can think of it is that it's the one way he can leap over all those security guards into the immortality gate. So it does give him that ability to do
so. Yeah, and to get out the straitjacket as well, sure.
Yeah.
But it's not really very well in this story, though. You know, there's no exposition that really kind of tells you what's going on. All of a sudden, you know, he's revived back. He's brought back from thin air, from magic potions and all that. And then, I don't know. Then the next time you see him, he has these magical powers.
His skull almost seemed artificial. I thought, you know, is it? And they bring Chameleon back. was Chameleon in the ring? And it's not. And I suddenly thought, perhaps he's got these magic powers because he isn't the Master. You know what I mean? It's not his body physically, but
a shadow of the former self.
Yeah, he sucked the essence out of those people, and the two people working the cafe, he did it with them. So presumably that was what was the aim of that. There were some lovely scenes, like you said, in the cafe and so on, but they all seemed very disjointed to me. It didn't hang together.
And no, it didn't.
It was only that last 10 or 15 seconds that made me believe it can be turned around, because if it isn't, if we were doing on the Cultural Collective our wizard list of the Doctor Who magazine top 200 stories, this would be down at the bottom 200 to me, because it just didn't hang together. Yeah. Yes, there was some great acting, but it just didn't hang together as a coherent story. But that may be the way it's been done. To me, it looked as though a couple of key scenes or a couple of key sentences might have got left out somewhere that might have made it to the view. I mean, let's face it, I've watched Doctor Who for 40 years. I should be able to follow a plot by now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, as I said, I thought I missed something and I had to go back and, you know, I thought maybe when I rewatch it, I'll see what I missed. And then I realized, no, I didn't miss anything. It's just not there.
Yeah, but it's a shame because, you know, they could have just done it even in the cafe or something with Wilf, you know, the Doctor and Wilf, just for the Doctor to take a few moments to explain what the hell is going on. You know, it's fine to have all of this, but, you know, at least set the scene for it afterwards and explain what's going on, because I'm sure that, you know, if we as loyal Doctor Who fans don't get it, I'm sure that there's a lot of people from the general public who won't understand it either.
Mm-hmm. Before we go to the room, Lewis, what did you and James think about the actual music? Because although it was overpowering a little bit in parts, there were some very powerful themes that went on.
Well, obviously, they had the recurring theme that we've heard before with the Masters, the dun-dun-dun-dun, you know, that theme was throughout his scenes there, and that was a theme that we've heard before, and it's come back as well. I'm not sure.
And they never explained who would help the Ood to progress, because that was one of the things quite early on. And I don't know whether for those people, I did send Lewis more than the one clip, so if they're wondering why that suddenly stopped mid-story, whether Lewis will have time to play any more later. But there was so much in the story. And they were all very long speeches, so you couldn't just grab snatches of things. And so that was why that trailed out at that particular point.
Well, that's
in the
one
story.
Of the unanswered questions is about the whole thing with the Ood and what's accelerating their race and why, you know, are they calling the doctor? And, you know, we're hoping that this will be answered in part two, because it seems like, you know, everyone, not just on Earth, it just seems like everyone's been having these nightmares across the universe. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, isn't that the case?
Yeah, and that needs to be explained, really. That's the big thing, is why have these nightmares about the Master? It's not just because he's coming back, you know. There has to be an underlying reason, and I really hope that they detail that and explain that in part two, I guess. But just going back to Dave's question about the music, I think the music was spot on. I mean, I'm perhaps a little bit biased because I've always really liked what Murray Gold has done with the music, and I've never found it, you know, particularly annoying. Or, you know, a lot of people claim that it's a bit loud or sort of in your face, but I've never really found that, and I thought that it's been, you know, just as good as anything else that he's done. And I agree completely with Lewis. It's nice that they've had. That they brought the Master's theme back, and the theme from Gallifrey, you know, with the bassoons and whatnot, and particularly with the Time Lords as well. It, you know, the music was very fitting, and I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with the next episode.
Of course, one thing, Wilf does make it into the TARDIS.
Yeah, I was just going to make that point as well.
He's the companion. He's the companion, of course, for this episode. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think in the opening credits they had, you know, Catherine Tate's name. It was David Tennant, Bernard Cribbins, and John Sim, and that was it.
Yeah.
You know, they're treating him fully as the companion for this episode, and if indeed not the two-parter, so...
Well, according to Russell T. Davies, he wanted to use Wilf more so than Donna, because Donna it would be, you know, because then he would have to kind of redo what he did already with Donna and making her forget again, whatever. But as we see in this episode, she's already remembering now. So I guess
yes. Yeah. Well, that's another question: is what's going to happen there? You know, but that's what's great about this cliffhanger, is there are so many unanswered questions, and I just hope that we get all of them answered in part two.
Yeah.
And one final thing, Lewis, just to say that it's actually Bernard Cribbins' birthday in a couple of days' time, on the 29th of December.
27th, I believe. No, not today's the 27th.
29th.
So yeah, wish him a happy birthday. And it was last week it was Nicholas Courtney's birthday, and he was his 80th birthday.
Yeah.
So happy birthday to him as well. Two greats. Yeah. And, you know, it'd be great to have Nick Courtney in a proper Doctor Who episode if his health allows it.
Yes, fingers crossed. You know, he's been in SJA, but hopefully he can make his way into Doctor Who. I'm sure Stephen Moffat's going to bring him back.
Well,
it's got to be done.
Let's hope. Also, just another interesting point about this episode is that we see President Obama. We actually hear him, too, where I think this is, even though we've had implied presidents in the past, I think, you know, with Bush, you know, in whatever episode that was.
President elects.
Yeah, but I don't think we've ever had a sitting president mentioned in a or shown in a documentary.
No, we haven't. We haven't. That's a good point. And it was nice to see the way that they did it. And I was quite pleased, actually, in the confidential that we actually got to see the actual actor's face.
Yeah.
You know, because they'd done their best to obviously purposefully not show his face throughout the episode to make it appear like it actually is the real Barack Obama.
Yeah.
But, you know, they show his face in the confidential, which I thought was great.
So that whole head-spinning thing worked out well for them because they were able to avoid showing his face that way. Though it was
exactly.
A silly thing, but whatever, we'll let it go. I probably would have done a glowing thing, sort of like the regeneration effect, and just have everyone glowing if it was up to me, but I guess they explained in the confidential they were trying to cut costs down, and I don't know which
one. Yeah. Well, I guess that they really have tried to cut the cost there, because I think, you know, they want to show more of Gallifrey, I think, in part two, and
But do we see Gallifrey? I mean, Gallifrey was never mentioned in that closing scene. I mean, they say for Gallifrey.
It wasn't. However, there is, and this will be, spoiler? I guess, only really applicable, sadly, to, it is a spoiler, but I'm not going to dwell too much on it. All I'm going to say is that if you live in the UK, you can see on the BBC Doctor Who website an exclusive clip from next week's episode, right. And that's all I'm going to say. And, yeah. And there I think you will appreciate and maybe understand why they've done certain things the way they have in terms of trying to not go too over the top with the special effects for things like, you know, the master race or whatever you want to call it.
One final thing, because I know you've got people waiting in the queue, but we know that the Doctor protected Will by putting him in that cabinet, but it wasn't very clear whether whether Donna Noble was also immune to the signal, because they cut away from that. Obviously, her memory started to come back, so her fate is unknown at this point as well.
Yeah, I think she wasn't affected because she was. It was that doctor thing was still in. You know, even though she can't remember, she's still Donna Doctor or something like that. I don't know. Another thing is, are we going to, is the story from, the 13th century in the church, is that going to have enough, is that going to play into part two, or was that just...
Yeah, it's got to, hasn't it? They wouldn't have shown that without any good reason, you know, the TARDIS in the stained glass window.
And why was the TARDIS so small? It was like a little miniature TARDIS. You know, was that
I guess it was so small.
Well, maybe
so
there were giants.
Otherwise people hadn't questioned it, you know.
I'm kidding, of course.
Master shrunk it.
The tissue compression eliminator.
Before we open up to the floor, sadly, I've got to bow out, but I'm really going to look forward to listening to the rest of this episode later on when it's all done and dusted and hearing everybody's opinions.
All right.
So I really look forward to reviewing episode two, and I'll see everybody... Next time.
All right. Well, thank you, James. I appreciate you, you know, being here and able to chime in on your thoughts on the end of time.
That's okay. It's my pleasure. It's been good chatting with you two chaps, and I hope everybody else enjoys it as well.
All right. Well, thanks again, James. I'll see you next year.
Cheers, guys. Yeah, see you next year. Not often you can say that. All the best, chaps. See you soon.
Bye
for now.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.
Now is a great time to thank our sponsor, Audible.com. Audible.com is the Internet's leading provider of spoken audio entertainment, information, and education programming. Content from Audible is downloaded and played back on your personal computers, CDs, iPod player. Just like you're listening to this podcast right now, you can do with content from Audible.com. Audible offers over 80,000 hours of audio programs from 270 content partners that include leading audiobook publishers, broadcasters, entertainers, magazines and newspaper publishers, podcasters, and business information providers. You can listen to whenever you like, wherever you like, just like the podcast you're listening to right now. Audible has over 1,000 science and technology and over 1,100 science fiction and fantasy titles to choose from. And more are being added all the time. Now, you don't have to choose a science fiction or fantasy title. We're just emphasizing that because we're assuming that's something that you might be interested in. They have over 50,000 titles to choose from. Every genre, Audible has it covered. And you can get a free audiobook download when you sign up for a free trial today. So in order to do that, simply go to www.audiblepodcast.com/Podshock for your free audiobook today. We also have links on our website to that as well. That's at gallifreyembassy.org or podshock.net, and then you can click on the Audible ad for that offer as well. Now, there's many to choose from, and since we're right now in reviewing the 10th Doctor's final specials, we're in the final days, if you will, of the 10th Doctor's era, there might be a good opportunity to go back and kind of review the 10th Doctor's era. And there's a documentary series that's available through Audible.com. It's made by BBC Audio called Doctor Who at the BBC. And it has Elizabeth Sladen in this series of audio documentaries, which highlights some of the various clips from media outlets that Doctor Who has been heard on. It's an interesting series. This one covers the 10th Doctor. To be honest, I haven't heard this one yet myself. I do have some of the others in this series with Elizabeth Sladen, who we all know is Sarah Jane Smith in Doctor Who. She plays that character, is narrating this series, and she's done some excellent work with this series in the past with some vintage clips going back to early Doctor Who. But this one is a audiobook that's focusing on the 10th Doctor. So why don't we hear a little preview of that right now?
Gently explored in the second series as well.
How fascinating. Go on, go on. How, what, is he doesn't come out, does he?
I can't possibly reveal what happened.
Hello, and welcome aboard for another journey along the time-space corridor of BBC Broadcasting. Previous excursions have found us travelling through 5 decades of Doctor Who, but this trip will be more localised. We're going to explore the myriad of recent radio and TV coverage, which, with David Tennant's Doctor at the helm, our favourite programme has been attracting. And as Doctor Who's executive producer and writer, Russell T. Davies, might say at this point, these items will include the words...
Romp.
Vicious.
And...
Cabbages.
My name is Elizabeth Sladen, and I'll be your host for this celebration of the current Doctor Who phenomenon. I played the Doctor's companion, Sarah Jane Smith, in the series between 1973 and 1976. And in 2006, I was delighted to bring Sarah back to the screen, first in the episode School Reunion, and then in the New Year special, which foreshadowed her own series, The Sarah Jane Adventures. In early 2005, Doctor Who was reimagined for the 21st century by Russell T. Davies and the creative team at BBC Wales. It was an exciting time, but no one knew for sure whether the new programme would capture the imagination of a modern audience. Well, 9 months after the TARDIS...
And there you have it, a sampling of Doctor Who at the BBC, the 10th Doctor. And again, this is a series. This particular one runs 2 hours and 5 minutes with Elizabeth Sladen narrating it, and it explores the 10th Doctor's era. And if you like this, check out the other Doctor Who at the BBC series as well. Real interesting coverage of various news clippings from that really captures the era of these earlier Doctor Who years. It's really interesting, and this one obviously focuses on the current Doctor, and I thought that was kind of appropriate since we're bidding adieu to the 10th Doctor, really, right now. We're at the end of his era, and it's a good time to kind of look back and reflect back on his era. So you can make that your selection of your free audiobook if you choose to. Go to www.audiblepodcast.com/podshock, and you can get that as your free audiobook download. So once again, we want to thank audible.com for sponsoring this episode of Doctor Who Podshock. It's because of their support that makes this episode possible. All right, we're going to open it up to callers now, but before we do, let's hear another clip that Dave prepared for us.
You look like that bloke from a Saxon, the one that went mad.
Isn't that funny? Isn't that just the best thing of all? The master of disguise.
I keep seeing things, Doctor. This face at night.
Who are you?
I'm Wilfred Mott.
No, but people have waited hundreds of years to find me, and then you manage it in a couple of hours.
Well, I'm just lucky, I suppose.
No, we keep on meeting Wilf over and over again, like something's still connecting us.
Well, what's so important about me?
Exactly. Why you? But I was told he will knock 4 times. That was a prophecy. Knock 4 times and then...
Yeah, but I thought, when I saw you before, you said that your people could change, like, your whole body.
I can still die. If I'm killed before regeneration, then I'm dead. Even then, even if I change, it feels like dying. Everything I am dies. Some new man goes sauntering away.
and I'm dead.
What if I ask you for help? They're more at work tonight than you and me.
Oh, yeah?
I've been told something is returning. And here I am. The noise in my head, Doctor. 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. Stronger than ever before.
I can't hear it.
Listen. Inside your head.
It's real. It's real. It's real! Thanks again, Dave. Let's get to the people in the queue right now. First up is Mr. Darth Skeptical himself. Hello, Darth.
Hey, Max.
Hey, how are you doing?
I am well indeed, except for a bit of a sore throat.
Oh, no.
Nah, it's not that bad, but it may impair your listening, so we'll have to see how this goes.
Your voice like butter is going to be impaired.
I know, it's very sad, but nevertheless, worth it for, you know, the holiday season, I suppose. I want to take a slight turn left, as it were, and just mention that if you didn't like this Christmas episode of Doctor Who, don't forget there was, in fact, another one on radio, in that there was the first Christmas special involving Doctor Who with
the Feast of Stephen?
Paul McGann and no, except for that one. Paul McGann and Sheridan Smith had Death in Blackpool, which is also the start of season 4, I guess, but it was a Christmas themed episode. Fabulous. It's not region locked. If you can find it, find it. You'll love it. Like this one, it is their series has now developed enough continuity that their Christmas special is also fairly continuity heavy.
They haven't published also it like, much, have they?
It's weird. I don't know why, because it was on Christmas. It was fabulous, you know, and it's a special thing. It's the first time this has happened. I don't know why they didn't publicize it, but it's there. And it will make you cry, just like this one had a scene that would make you cry. That one, too, has a lot of emotional resonance and well worth looking out for. So
definitely have to check
it
out.
You want some more Doctor Who?
I was unaware of it, actually, to be honest with you. I don't know why they didn't make it better known.
It's especially weird because it is the premiere. As far as I know, at least the physical copies of the CDs are not available to purchase yet, I think. It's the first – it's an actual premiere of something new. So,
yeah, well, that makes sense
indeed.
With the other – I know the other series, or at least the first series with Paul McGann and with Lucy Miller, the character, that was originally on radio before it was released on Big Finish.
I see Terrace is saying in chat that he had his for weeks. Really a little bit before its premiere, but it's not an old episode. Like they have been in recent days, BBC 7 has been doing seasons 2 and 3, which have been around for a long time, but have only now been broadcast for the first time. This episode, though, is considered more recent. It's good stuff. Find that if you didn't like this episode.
Or even if you liked it, episode, find it as well. Why not have
Well, that's certainly true. That's certainly true. Yeah, I mean, it's stunning stuff. But I'm totally in love with Sheridan Smith, so I'm a little biased. now, as for this episode, I have to tell you that the first viewing for me, I really thought that this was the love child of Voyage of the Damned and Legopolis. There was, you know, the pointless, spooky atmosphere that existed in Legopolis that went absolutely nowhere. All that stuff, the Watcher, who the hell's the Watcher? What is that? You know, totally unexplained.
Well, now the Watcher's back, but she's a woman in white now.
Who knows? well, if not that, then, you know, maybe it's the Master's unexplained powers, whatever. Lots of stuff that didn't necessarily make a lot of sense. Jammed up against, you know, this thing that they did in Voyage of the Damned of having all these set pieces that were sort of poorly edited together and there being no narrative flow. And so I was really, on my first viewing, I was really quite disappointed. But unlike Waters of Mars, I really wanted to rewatch this one a lot. And I've watched it, what, God, I don't know, 10 or 12 times now. And that's not been that long since it's come on. And as I've
been watching it ever since it's been on.
Pretty much. And as I've watched it more, my appreciation has grown and grown and grown. And when I sit here and think about all the things that I want the next episode to answer, I'm mightily impressed by just how much anticipation there actually is in me for the next episode, especially given where I was after seeing it once. It's not a narratively clean episode, this one. There are so many cliffhangers, you don't know where to focus your mind at first. I think it's overload when you see it the first time. But
it seems a mismatch, doesn't it? A mismatch.
Maybe. I mean, certainly at first that is what I thought. But now I really think, wow, the problem really is that it should be one episode, I'm thinking that when you knit it together, you'll see, man, they had to really pick a weird time to do the break. Because I just think there's so much going on. It doesn't admit of a natural break in the storyline. And so we're left with lots and lots of things going on and thinking, well, that didn't build like a whole episode did. Because I'm telling you right now, I think of all the two-parters since the 2005 series started, this first part is probably the most disappointing of any first part. Probably.
Yeah, I think it very much relies on part two. I really think,
yeah,
you know, and I think they know that too, and I think maybe that's why they didn't go with the usual, you know, creating a new episode name, you know, Nightmares Reign for this episode, and they went with, you know, the End of Time part one to make it clear that, you know, this is just part one of the story.
Right, exactly. And, you know, because there's not this single cliffhanger, you know, you're not left there wondering what you normally wonder, which is how is the Doctor going to get out of this one? I mean, because it's more than that. Which of these many, many things is going to kill the Doctor? You have no idea at this point. Anything could be killing the Doctor. Anything. Mm-hmm. And so that may, I think, harder to watch on the first time, but I think it does make it more rewarding as you watch it more. It reminds me a lot of sort of the War Games, really, in the way that there's so much going on at the front of the War Games that the regeneration bit that happens at the end is somehow pushed to the margins. I mean, okay, fine, when you were watching the War Games for the first time, if you were alive then, I mean, you may not have known that this was the last story of Patrick Troughton. Mm-hmm. And so, therefore, that wasn't even in your mind. And we're saddled with this, you know, 18-month thing of this is actually the last David Tennant, which I think has been terrible to know that this is when he's going to regenerate. But given that, you know, if you're looking back at War Games, knowing that it is the one in which Patrick Troughton regenerates, I think this story has a lot of similarity with the War Games in that there's so much at the front, you know, eight episodes, let's call it, that really doesn't have anything to do with the last two, that you're sort of misdirected. And I think that that's what RTD is doing here. He's still trying to misdirect us because it's the only thing he's got left, because we know what the end is. So the only thing he can do is play this massive shell game with us so that we're still guessing until the very end. And, you know, all credit to him. That's the hand that he's been dealt, or maybe that he dealt himself. I don't know. But within those parameters, this is the best I think that he can do, is just make it sort of confusing on the front end so that the back end just is going to look amazing. And I absolutely have confidence that it will, in fact, turn out to be a great story.
Yeah, you know, it's always the case when, especially, you know, like when they do the prequel, like the Star Wars prequels, you know, I think George Lucas said it's like you know it's going to be a train wreck, but you don't know how it's going to happen. So it's
right.
It's sort of that thing, you know, where you know where it's going to lead to.
That doesn't bode very well for the next episode.
What was that? I'm sorry.
That doesn't bode very well if you think it's going to be a train wreck.
Well, being, you know, the Doctor's, the regeneration, you know that's coming. That's your train wreck, you know, in a sense, you know, the death of the 10th Doctor, as he's terming it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I think, you know, that my initial comparisons, and I think Dave, I don't know if he did in this podcast, but maybe the last one, mentioned that he too sort of saw commonality between this and Voyage of the Damned, and that they're, you know, sort of scatterbrained or whatever. But it's not at all like Voyage of the Damned, the more I think about it, because like Dave, I share an intense hatred of Voyage of the Damned, thinking that it is the worst.
So you even have a green version of Banaka Laka Laka, whatever his name is.
Right, but see, I think that's clever. I think that I love that. I love the Vinvachi. I think that there, and the fact that there is a relationship with the Vizachi, the Bonacafalata character, I think it's very, very clever, because what is RTD doing? He is thinking Voyage of the Damned is the one episode of Doctor Who that has been watched by more people.
Yeah, it's probably absolutely one of the highest the top watched episodes.
No, it is. It's the the highest rated one. It's not the highest in terms of placement in the week, but it's the highest number of people. So therefore, he's thinking, okay, people will remember that. Whether they liked it or not, they saw that, and so I'm going to connect that character up. It's the same thing that he did in Love and Monsters, where he's like, okay, people did in fact see the Slitheen, so what I'm going to do is make a cousin race to that, and it'll be a nice joke. And it worked both times. It had me laughing both times. So I think it's very, very clever. I like the fact that they're there. I think they're appropriate comedy relief, and they have this sort of wacky Six Doctor comic strip feel about them that I find amusing. So I'm completely happy with them.
And we sort of know how they're going to play out either, you know.
Exactly, yeah. But I mean, one assumes that they're probably, you know, on the good side of things, rather than the bad, or at least, you know, the neutral side of things. But we'll see. I mean, another thing that's left up in the air. But, you know, the other thing, with Voyage of the Damned, see, the story itself is so massively simple that there's not anything of substance there that holds all those set pieces together. And I know that a lot of fans have been posting that this episode doesn't have a story for 60 minutes, but I don't see that at all. I think it's got way too much for 60 minutes. I mean, what's going to happen to Donna, to Sylvia, to Wilf, to the Doctor, to the Time Lords, to the lady talking to Wilf, to the Master, to the Time War, or indeed to the time itself? I mean, how is the Waters of Mars going to tie into this? Is it going to be more than just that one little line that we got? I hope it will be, but we don't know yet. And I just think that there's so much going on here that it is absolutely an explosion of Doctor Who, which I think is great. It took a while for me to think that, but I really do think this is good, good stuff and bodes very well for next week. If anything is really wrong with this episode, I think it is a movie, and that, you know, it shouldn't have been broken up. I think ultimately that's what we're going to think about this thing. The other thing that might be slightly wrong with it is how damn long was that laughter? I mean, it's 5 minutes of seeing that the Master race. I mean, I could take it for like 2.5 minutes, maybe. But for how long it was, it did go on a bit much. And it would have been nicer to have had more of the Time Lord bit at the end. Mm-hmm. That may have made a little bit more of an impact. But that's, you know, a minor quibble. I mean, the things that I absolutely loved about this episode are things that you didn't, apparently. The Flying Master. I love that.
Well, it's not that I didn't love it. I just would like to have it explained
better. The Doctor didn't react to it. Yeah.
Why would he react to it? It's completely
normal. Because he'd never seen a Time Lord do that before, one would have thought.
I beg to differ, sir. Eighth Doctor, after regeneration, he suddenly knocks down a door. We've never seen the Doctor do that before. We've never seen that amount of raw power. Where does that come from? I think that this actually validates the Eighth Doctor with that much superhuman strength.
He did two angels to lift him up that shaft in Voyage of the Damned.
But the Tenth Doctor's not broken. The Tenth Doctor's not near a regeneration or a resurrection point. I mean, it's fairly clear in the episode that you have, you know, the positive force that's resurrecting him, and you have the negative force that Lucy Saxon has that's ripping him apart, so that he is literally torn in two.
Yeah,
and so all
that
of that tremendous power that you see with, like, the regeneration itself, I mean, the regeneration in the modern era is an explosion of absolute power. And I think that what you're seeing here is this body is now split apart, and so that energy, the regeneration energy, is something that you can call upon to express yourself in a superhuman way. That's what I'm taking from it. Is it is it spelled out? No, it's not spelled out. Maybe it will be too. But it's clear enough to me that he is in distress and his body is not together. Plus, you got the thing of the final admission that this whole sound or drums thing is real. So is that playing into it?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it will. Again, you know, this might all be amplified for us more in the second part. I don't think it for me, it doesn't really need to be, because I think we've had, you know, with the Eighth Doctor and now with this, I think we've had an expression that there's something more powerful about Gallifreyans than not. I mean, you know, we've had little hints along the way, you know, the fact that he can go outside without a spacesuit, really, in the Third Doctor's era, and to an extent in the Fifth Doctor's era. The whole thing with telepathy that, you know, comes from the Sensorites and it goes through every Time Lord that we've seen, it expresses that there is something superhuman about the Doctor or about Time Lords. So is it fully explained? No. But is it plausible within the universe? It is to me, under these particular circumstances. But I do hope, like you, I do hope we get something more about that as we go through.
Yeah. Well, that's why I'm weary about making any real judgments until we see. You know, you said it before, it felt like a movie, and to me it feels like a movie interrupted, mm-hmm. where, you know, now I just saw the first half of the movie. I'm waiting to see the second half before I can really make any sort of review or judgment, really.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's entirely fair. You know, another thing that stood out for me, and I don't know why it particularly stood out for me, but the racial diversity of the cast.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this has been a thing of the RTD era, but for some reason, this one felt really well balanced. I like the fact that, you know, you had rich, powerful African British people.
Yeah, the Joshua Neasmith character.
Naismith, yeah. Mm-hmm. The fact that, again, Donna is displaying a predilection for interracial marriage, which is great. There was just a lot going on, and you know, you had two destitute people, one of them white, one of them black. You know, I just think that there was a very good job by Andy Pryor in casting a range of faces to look at, which I quite liked indeed. I also thought Murray Gold's music was I ripped on him last time for Waters of Mars, but this time, my God, it was great. I loved the running music. And there was a lot of running, so there damn well better have been some good running music. I love that. I also love the fact that sometimes there wasn't music. I mean, in that beautiful scene in the cafe, you know, there's not music to start with, so that you get drawn right into that conversation. And then when David Tennant really turns it on and you get to the part where he's going to lose it, you've got a little bit of music that helps you lose it too. Great job, I think, with bringing back theme. Even the Master's theme was different. It was turned. It was switched a little bit, played with different instruments than it was last time around. I just think he was really on form with – oh, and that beautiful thing, the absolute Murray Gold creation of a cliffhanger at the end of the teaser. I mean, if you think about what that teaser really was, it's Wilf looking at stained glass, and that's it. And yet – the entire thing is motivated by Murray Gold's music, which makes you think, what in the hell is going on with this? So, I don't know. I thought he was just fabulous. Love the music in this one. And I have to say, I love the resurrection thing. You're saying it's all magic, and I'm saying that's great, because it cleverly recalled the demons. People who, you know, I think like you, maybe who are claiming it wasn't Doctor Who or it felt wrong because it was too magical. I think it's been a while since you've seen the demons and seen Roger Delgado in that. Of course, Mr. Magister would have couched the science of his resurrection in ritual. He's probably had this plan lying around since the demons anyway.
But that for me wasn't the deal break. It was the fact that you had, you know, battling potions, you know.
But the potions are explained
potion
as...
And I've got one that will counter your potion. And I expected Saxon to say, and I knew you'd do that, so I've got a third potion to counteract your counter potion.
Yeah.
Well, I see what you mean by that. I don't agree with that, but I see what you're saying. I mean, I think it... Why would he have expected that? Because, as she explains, I'm not smart, but I know people who are. I mean, I think he chose her as his companion / wife because she was stupid. I mean, that's what we see of her when we first see her in Sound of Drums, that she's very docile. She's very unexceptional. I think that's why it's so surprising that she kills him in the end, because it doesn't seem to be in her character to have done that. But she's revealing that she had this whole level ticking away behind in the back of her brain that she was planning for this. And maybe that part of it doesn't make any sense, really. Because we don't see any of that in Sound of Drums. She certainly seems to be quite happy to be by his side, but, you know. Oh, that's not true. We do see a little bit in Sound of Drums where she almost is starting to talk to that reporter. So there is a little glimmer that maybe she is thinking, I don't like this guy as much as I'm pretending to like this guy. But at any rate, that's science because, you know, she took the formula to people who could get the opposite of the formula. So, I mean, there is the implication that it's not magic, that it is, in fact, you know, some scientist somewhere cooking up something that is the opposite of what the master was using. So, yeah,
and of course,
I mean,
don't
to me,
forget
that whole... Go ahead.
Say the master had only been on Earth 18 months before he came Prime Minister, because that had been the limitation that the Doctor had geared into. So he hadn't had years to plan that cult to do that.
Oh, but he'd certainly been on Earth before. I'm saying I think it's entirely possible, there's nothing in the script against it, that another incarnation of the Master had done this. That it you know, certainly there is an affinity between this plan and his manipulation of ritual in the demons to suggest that it's entirely plausible that this is how he would have done it.
But it wouldn't have been called the Book of Saxon, would it? Because he'd only had 18 months before coming Prime Minister.
I mean,
and remember, a whole year got brought back anyway.
He could have certainly taken
with the reset.
Notes that he had. Yeah, but he could have taken notes that he had written before and just changed the title of those notes. I mean, my point is that it's clearly shown in the original series that, in fact, he did know a lot about ritual. He did know how ritual could be used to manipulate people. So this plan makes sense given what we've seen of the Master in the past. I don't think it comes out of nowhere and it has no relation whatsoever to Doctor Who of the past. Mm-hmm. That's my thought.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
All right.
I also liked the running gag of Obama's going to fix everything with a speech. I loved that. I thought it was so funny because I thought it was a nice
magic
book into
right
the
there.
Christmas. That's magic right there, indeed. It was a nice book into the Christmas invasions. You know, tell the president that he's not my boss, and he's certainly not turning this into a war. I mean, it's a different president, but we're still going to make a joke about, you know, the fundamental thing about that particular president that everybody knows and can sort of relate to. And I thought that was clever that we've now turned it around and said something about Obama that we would have said about a Bush or whoever, Winters or whatever the faux character was before. So that was really good. And you know, finally, I think the thing that surprised me the most about the episode is that it's clearly a sequel for The Master. I mean, past most of the time, when The Master returns, that story in which he returned didn't have that much to do with the story that came before it. It was just, oh, here's The Master again. Great. Whatever. This one, though, is really a direct sequel from The Master's point of view to Sound of Drums. And, of course, that's because, you know, there's a resurrection that's necessary. So there has to be that narrative link. But because we have this admission that the Sound of Drums are real, it's much more than just connected by the resurrection. We're going to actually find out what all that stuff was about that really didn't get explained in Last of the Time Lords. And that the explanation of that might be the thing that actually kills David Tennant. Which, if that's what happens, I think I'd be very, very happy indeed with that. So I was really very surprised that we picked up on the Sound of Drums again, because I didn't really think that that's where we were going at all with the Master. I just thought he was going to pop back and then have another plan and, you know, we'd be into that new plan and that would be it. So good stuff all around. Took a while to like it, but I really think this is going to be the start of something very, very good.
So there you are, folks. Watch it 10 times.
I only watched it twice so far.
And maybe it'll make more sense to you.
I did enjoy it the second time around a bit more, you know. But then again, that's usually the case because your expectations are altered a little bit.
Yeah.
And there was no bus.
There was no bus. No flying buses. Yay! All right.
Well, there's a little bus.
Yeah, there was, what was it called? It was Sparrow Lane.
Sparrow Lane.
Mm-hmm. Couldn't help but think of Sally Sparrow. All right. Well, thank you, Darth, so much. We got other people in the queue, so we want to get to them. But as always, it's always good to hear your input, and we look forward to hearing you again next week.
All right. Thanks a lot.
All right. Cheers.
Cheers.
And Happy New Year.
And to you.
Thanks. And feel better.
Thank you very much.
You know, here he is with a sore throat, and I said, oh, we'll go easy on him. We'll just let him, you know, give him a couple minutes to talk, and then we'll move on to the next one. And really took away the show.
Yes, sorry to those in the queue, but Darth does have lots of good stuff to say.
No. We just hope he feels better. So this is a good place to break it up here. We're going to return in the next episode of Doctor Who Podshock, which we'll continue our discussion of The End of Time Part 1. So stay tuned for Part 2 of our discussion of The End of Time Part 1, which hopefully will be out very shortly this week before Part 2 is transmitted on BBC. So hopefully there won't be too much of a wait for that. And we'll continue. We had various other people in the queue waiting to have a say about The End of Time Part 1. So you have that to look forward to. But as I said, everyone had a good deal to say about this story. So therefore, the show did run a little bit longer than anticipated or expected. Or, well, actually, I guess we do sort of anticipate and expect both of those, but plan for. Let's use that term. So therefore, we'll be back with the continuation of this, you know, and being that it's in the middle of the holidays right now, this is coming out in between, Christmas, Festivus, Kwanzaa, and various other winter solstice, various other Hanukkah, various other holidays of this season, and between that and the new year, we never did do a holiday episode of Doctor Who Podshock, and at least we didn't do one this year. We've done them in the past. But we did receive a holiday greeting from the good folks at DWO's WhoCast. Both Trev and Marty sent us this.
Have yourself a merry little
ho, 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 ho. Ho, 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 ho. I'll stop now.
Hello to the listeners of
Insert Podcast Name Here.
Happy Christmas to our favourite podcasters ever.
We love you guys. Or girls. Or whatever. We think you're the bestest podcast of all the Doctor Who podcasts out there. We love yous.
Awesome.
Oh, we're only kidding. Podshock, Lewis, and all you guys, we love you. We can't get enough of you. Your episodes are about 3 days long each, but, you know, they could be a little bit longer because we just can't get enough of you. We love
There's
you.
More days in the week, so fill it up.
Yeah, I think we need to have the first 24-hour podcast, and I think if anyone's going to do it, Podshock's got to be the one.
The training is there, the skills, the knowledge, the means, the methods, and everything else. It's all there. Do it.
Indeed. This is Trevor.
And this is Marty.
And on behalf of the DWO WhoCast, I want to wish yourself and all your listeners a Merry Christmas and a bountiful and Happy New Year. And we look forward to hearing more of your episodes in 2010.
Absolutely, certainly. Have a good one.
And have yourself a merry little Christmas now.
Oh, that was very sweet of them. And the same goes out from Doctor Who Podshock to the DWO WhoCast and all the other Doctor Who podcasts out there. And to you, our listeners, I hope you had a great holiday and a wonderful, bright, and prosperous new year coming up in 2010. Or are we finally calling it 2010 now? We went from 1999, you know, we weren't calling it 1999, but we went from 1999 to 2000, and ever since we've been stuck saying 2001, 2002, 2003. All right, okay, it works. So that means the Gallifreyan Embassy has been around since 1985. Yes. Oh, I feel old now. Once again, thank you, Trev and Marty, exclamation point. it's an inside joke with the email. Trev and Marty, thank you so much. Check them out. DWO WhoCast, it's another Doctor Who podcast. Fine podcast at that. Check them out. They're available via iTunes and or go to the WhoCast.com. And as far as doing a 24-hour podcast, be careful what you ask for. Actually, I was thinking about that last year. Seriously, it was, I thought that went through my mind, but I pushed it out very quickly. A 24-hour podcast, it would actually be a live stream that we would do, but doing a 2-hour live show is exhausting enough. Imagine doing it for 24 hours is a bit hair-raising, but you never know. So besides part 2 of this podcast coming up, we also have part 2 of the 10 Doctors special. Yes, Doctor Who Podshock, the extra edition, the 10 Doctors special, which we did. And part 2 will be coming up soon. We released part 1 earlier this month. And if you're a Podshock supporting subscriber, you would have gotten that one already. And if you're not a Podshock supporting subscriber, what are you waiting for? Go to GallifreyanEmbassy.org or Podshock.net and become a Podshock supporting subscriber today. And by doing so, you can get some great extra content all at the same time while supporting this podcast. So I want to thank James Norton and Dave Cooper for helping out with the hosting duties for this episode. You can follow James on Twitter at twitter.com/JamesNorton. You can follow Dave on Twitter at twitter.com/DaveAC. Of course, you can follow Doctor Who Podshock on Twitter, not only just for news on Doctor Who Podshock, but for all Doctor Who news, go to twitter.com/Podshock, and you can follow Podshock on Twitter as well. And as always, go to our website. We have news and information and forums, and you can follow all of us there at thegallifreyanembassy.org or podshock.net. And you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/LewisTrapani. That's going to wrap things up for this show. Be back soon for part 2 of our review of Doctor Who, The End of Time, part 1. And don't forget, we'll be reviewing Doctor Who, The End of Time, part 2 this coming Sunday, January 3rd at 5 p.m. on TalkShoe. Go to our website, thegallifreyanembassy.org or podshock.net for details. Until then, cheers, everyone. You have been listening to Doctor Who Podshock, presented by the fan-run GallifreyanEmbassy.org. Doctor Who is owned and trademarked by the BBC. Doctor Who Podshock is not affiliated with the BBC in any way. Come back next time for another exciting and informative episode of Doctor Who Podshock. You can email us at feedback@podshock.net. Doctor Who Podshock theme music by Jeff Smith at thejeffsmith.com. This has been a production of Art Trap Productions and is presented to you by the Gallifreyan Embassy and has been made possible by supporting subscribers and donations from listeners like you.
Pardon me for asking, but why is it so big?
Oh, good question. Why is it so big?